All right. Mason, thank you for being here today, taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, it's my pleasure. So I would just like to start at the beginning. Could you describe your initial steps into the music industry and even how Metro Station was formed?
Okay, so I got started playing music. I was put in piano lessons when I was really young. And then I went to a I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, so I went to like a I was raised Christian. And I went to a giant Texas mega church with like a skate park and arcade and like one of those big, Texas mega churches. And they had a youth band, with like a every Wednesday night they do like a youth service and stuff and like a legit stage, couple hundred kids every Wednesday. And so I played in the youth band. I must have been like 12 or 13. So that was really where I learned how to play, was in church. And then from there, how Metro Station started, me and Trace met when we were like 16, along with the other guys. They were a little bit older. And, we just, he came over to my house one day I was pretty experienced with GarageBand at the time, is what I was using. I was, it was a long time ago. And so we recorded the first song. It was a song, the first song, The Love That Left You to Die, was like one of the first songs we ever made together, that has been released, actually. And that was like one of the first songs we recorded in my room on GarageBand. And then from there, we just started making music and playing shows and doing it that way.
Which is super interesting to me because, I mean, Metro Station came about in a time that I like to call really the golden age of the emo scene, if you will. And I'm kind of curious, could you expand a little bit on how you and Trace initially met? Because I think the combination of the two of you has been, so instrumental in making Metro Station what it is.
Well, first of all, I'll push back on you on the emo thing. It's funny because I do a lot of the, I have been recently doing a bunch of like emo nights and stuff, and there's definitely like a resurgence of emo music. But when we came out, no one considered us emo. I even think now you listen, anybody listening to that record, it's not an emo record. We were calling ourselves electronic dance music at the time. We were calling ourselves pop dance, electronic dance music.
Of course.
So it's funny. It's funny how and I don't mean this in a, bad way towards people who put us in that category, but it's just funny how you kind of get looped in a you kind of jumbled in a category when call Shake It whatever you want. It's not an emo song.
I totally agree with you. And I was talking to some friends about this actually, that emo used to be a pejorative. No one was necessarily enthusiastic to be called emo back during those days, certainly the days of the 2000s. And if anything, maybe it all just kind of coalesced under the banner of being seen and being part of the scene, if you will. So I totally agree with you. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit more about that and your thoughts on emo in general. That's
Well, the
fascinating.
problem is it, and it's not a problem, but we were around, Crush Management, who does like, Fall Out Boy and Panic the Disco, and they do all that kind of stuff. And so, we were around that kind of scene, and so I just think people didn't know what to do with us. So they were just like, oh, they're with all this stuff. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But we were on pop radio, so I again, I think you listen to Control, you listen to, I mean, and the Control, what's, I don't know. You kind of get, it's funny how people get pushed into a thing, into a box, and you have to be labeled something. Even when you're going, no, that's not what we are, that's not what we are. But I have no control over that. So, but again, I'll
It's
say
true.
I don't know anybody who would listen. It's funny because Shake It is so people love it, especially at the emo nights and stuff. But I don't know one person who would say Shake It's an emo song. Because it's not.
I would agree.
It's not.
You know, it's I would agree. Did you set out? Okay, so here's what I think is really interesting. Did you grow up in a more alternative atmosphere when it came to your musical influences, like when you were a teenager?
No. No, I wasn't really allowed to listen to a lot of stuff. You know, I was allowed to listen to, like, Christian music, you know.
Of course.
Reliant K, I guess, was probably as, you know, far into, like, the emo thing as I got. But, you know, as I got older, one of my things I always did, well, first of all, Napster was big. So I was making CDs of just hits. All the songs that I loved that were probably on top 40 or whatever, they're just hits, you know? And especially when I was growing up, you know, stuff like Now compilations and stuff like that were very big. So it's just all hits. You know what I mean? I've never been a record person. I've never, sometimes I do. Sometimes, you know, if there's a record like Hot Fuss by the Killers or something, like, yes, okay, I'm a record guy. But I'm not. I'm not really. I'm a hits guy. And so Now compilation CDs and stuff like that, where it's just all, you know, the best of the best. That's what I listened to, you know. That's what I had in my car. Or I made it myself. Or it was, you know, hits from the 80s, 90s, you know, early 2000s and stuff. That's what I was listening to. Because I just love, I don't know. Some people like to listen to records and kind of go on the journey. I've never really enjoyed that. I like to listen to the hits, you know.
Well, that's kind of an interesting point to touch on, because as you mentioned that, and as you mentioned Metro Station being very much a pop band, did you set out to make a pop band? And
yeah.
What was the experience of achieving the rapid success that you did with Metro Station?
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to interviews, I mean, all of our interviews are, you know, we talk about, I think a lot of the stuff me and Blake and Trace were into, New Order, Depeche Mode, OMD, The Cure. We like The Killers, obviously. Who else? There are a couple other ones, but you know, all that stuff is very electronic and pop and kind of on the dark pop kind of a thing. So yes, I had all the intention. I wanted to write hooks. You know, I guess for me, it was always about, I love a good chorus.
Of course.
You know? So yeah, it was very intentional. You know, I always thought Kelsey was the bigger song though, but you know, you never know, you know. And what was the second question?
Well, I think that was pretty much answering it. Okay. I think it more so, you know, touching on, you know, Metro Station's positioning as you see it, to your point, versus how people have perceived it even more recently. But I'm curious, to piggyback off of that, what the experience was living through the success, especially if Metro Station at the time, I mean, just an incredibly successful act. Obviously, I was a fan of Metro Station. And I'm just curious what your experiences were living through that success at the time, if there's any anecdotes you could offer.
It was cool. It was great. I mean, I was really young. You know, I was 18 when we got the day after I turned 18, we got signed. And, you know, before that, you know, at 16 and 17, we were putting everything on MySpace. So songs like 17 Forever, Kelsey, Now That We're Done, I think Wish We Were Older, Control, all the stuff from the Questions We Ask at Night EP, which was like our first EP we released, you know, independently on MySpace. All that stuff was already out, you know, and by the time I was 16. And so to me, it didn't feel as rapid as I think it felt for everyone else, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's always the case. You know, because there were 2 years in there where we spent, you know, playing coffee shops and running around LA and playing house parties and, you know, and then, you know, the success, it was great. I was really young and, you know, I think, you know, when you're that young and you have that much success, you know, stuff can, you know, egos can clash and things can happen. And, you know, there's all kinds of kinds of things that can happen, you know?
Understood. So can you talk more about the challenges that led to the hiatus of Metro Station and your decision to pursue solo projects?
Well, you know, it was just all, you know, just infighting and you know, ego stuff. And then that's when, you know, I took control over Metro Station and released the EP, Middle of the Night EP, and a couple other singles. And so, you know, that was really important to me to take the reins and put out the music I thought Metro Station needed to put out, you know. And then me and Trace reconciled, and we released a couple things, did a couple tours here and there. And then, you know, I think it's hard to, because a band's hard, you know, it's hard to see eye to eye on everything. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Sometimes that happens.
It is. Now, I find it very similar to any experience that you have in collaboration with other people, whether it be mm-hmm. in business, whether it be in art. It, you know, these circumstances are normal. But as you said, you know, you were young and you've evolved and matured, and it's an interesting journey.
Some of us have.
So brings me kind of to the next point, you know, touching on reconciliation. What mm-hmm. motivated the reunion of Metro Station around 2011, and how has the band's music evolved since then, and is it continuing?
We'll see if it continues. I'm not sure. But as far as what the reconciliation, I think, you know, I thought, you know, it was the right time to do it. You know, unfortunately, you know, once again, you know, we get, you know, it's, we bump heads a lot, and you kind of do that whether, you know, if, especially like you're saying, when you're creating stuff with somebody and you have two different views of the way things need to go, you know, and, you know, we've both done solo music, and I think anyone who listens to the solo music can see who was writing what and who was singing what. And I think it's pretty apparent on how things are. I don't know how else to say it. I don't know how else to say it, because it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's one of those things. And, you know, that's, it is what it is.
Fully understood. So speaking to your recent projects and mm-hmm. Social Order,
mm-hmm.
Could you speak to Social Order, what inspired its formation, and what you're working on currently?
Well, me and Anthony, the original drummer from Metro Station, we've always been very tight, but we've had similar falling outs as well, you know, over the years. And I think for me and him, we both have the same vision of what we wanted to do, where I don't want to give away all my tactics and plans, but I'll kind of flesh it out to what I kind of saw.
Sure.
Well, me and him got back together, me and Anthony, drummer, and then we have one of our really good friends, Andrew Ward, who's on guitar, and he was actually making music videos for us at the time, and then he joined the band. So it's really cool having his expertise on the video stuff, you know, for all the group. We pretty much do everything in-house, which is awesome. As I've watched Emo Coming Back, I guess in my head I'm going, okay, you know, what's next? I kind of view things very cyclically. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, trends come and they go and then they come back around. I think anyone looking at today's music can see that that's the case. So I've always been super influenced, you know, again, like all the bands I was saying, Depeche Mode, OMD, New Order, The Cure. So a lot of goth new wave stuff and post-punk. And so as I've seen punk come back, I think that, you know, okay, what's the next wave coming on the horizon? You know, I think musicians should always try to do this. You know, having a scene's cool. That's great. But you should also see, okay, what might next come over the horizon? What wave can I ride next? not that you want to change your style all the time and, you know, just hop on trends, but it is interesting to see things come full circle. Like, you know, grunge can only be grunge for so long until it becomes cringe, and then, you know, and then it falls away, and then something else comes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff can only, you can't be the mainstream and be the counterculture at the same time.
That's a very interesting point.
Does that make sense? Because how can it be possible? How can it be possible? Mm-hmm. How can you be the mainstream and the counterculture at the same time? Eventually, you become, you know, what's super popular. And now everybody's making the emo music. You know, it's to me, and I don't mean this it sounds kind of mean. But everything's starting to sound the same to me. That's just how I feel. So I see like a new wave of like post-punk, kind of goth. I think there's a lot of bands that are doing it right now that are just coming up. You see a lot of festivals happening, especially over here in LA. California, they did Darker Waves, which was a big festival with like, you know, older new wave bands like New Order and, you know, Echo and the Bunnymen and there's another one, Psychedelic Furs, and a lot of newer guys coming up. So friends of mine, Moreau was on there, who's had a huge song on TikTok for a while. I don't know if you know him. Twin Tribes, which is a band Social Order toured with that has been coming up in like kind of that post-punk goth scene. Glass Spells, another friends of ours. So that's really where we've been trying to get in. That's the kind of scene we love and want to be a part of. And luckily we've had a couple songs on the dark wave playlist on Spotify, and that's really helped, you know, us get our, you know, music out there, you know, for a starting band, you know.
Of course. No, I find that super fascinating because you have touched on a lot of the genres that I've been super interested in lately as it pertains to post-punk, post-grunge, shoegaze especially.
Yeah, shoegaze.
I've just been obsessed. It feels like these things have come out of nowhere. And it's interesting to hear your opinion because you've been through so many different stylistic evolutions and you would have a very valid opinion on this.
Yeah, I'm still always trying to write pop songs. And I know a lot of people probably... You know, I try to keep that to myself, you know,
of course,
because some people hate that, but I agree, I love I've always been into that kind of scene, you know. The Cure, I mean, you can find old videos of me opening up Metro shows with playing Just Like Heaven, you know, because it's just always been a big part of. A huge influence for me, you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I suppose that brings us into a few key points, you know, in terms of your personal reflections, having been in the industry for so long.
Yeah.
Your personal reflections, your future plans, reflecting on your career thus far. What are some of those valuable lessons that you've learned personally?
Keep your... it's not just about music. You have to be kind of like, you know, a social butterfly too. And that's something I've always kind of struggled with because I don't really like that. I don't really like people all that much. I'm just kidding. But you can't, because musicians are moody and they're like, you know, introverted, and, you know, a lot of us are, I think, you know, and, you know, you kind of have to, get out of that and be a little more social, and, you know, you gotta make a bunch of friends, and, you know, you never know who you're going to meet, who, you know, not that can just help you, but, you know, someone that can influence you.
Of course.
You know, so I would probably tell my younger self that. And what else? You know, check your ego at the door. You know, that's really important. You know, I definitely have failed a lot of times in that. But it is totally about being humble. And also, you know, like I was saying, you know, I'm definitely looking at trends and stuff like that, but I am always still doing what I want to do. you know, or the music I want to make. And that's important too, is like, yes, the trends are important. And I think studying music history and, you know, how things have moved and shaped and what comes back around and the evolution of different styles is important to know and stuff, but you got to make what you like, because sometimes I see artists that, especially with the emo thing, all of a sudden these artists that weren't doing emo just hopped on the emo thing. And it's just like, I don't know. To me, that's a little cringe, I think. You know what I mean? It's like, you should be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it works for you, good for you. That's great. You know, you win. But you know, I don't feel like I'm making any, the music I'm making is no different than what I've always made.
Sure.
You know, I really don't feel, I think anyone can listen to Social Order and they hear a lot of Metro Station in it. That's just, you know, how it, you know, I think probably because of my voice and my writing style and everything like that. But I've always kind of, I'm still making the same. I feel like I'm still making the same music I've always made, you know? Maybe it's a bit darker. It's obviously more mature. So
that in and of itself does raise a couple of interesting key points.
Yeah.
The first of which being, do you feel like the music you're making now is darker? Has your evolution as an artist progressed in a darker territory?
I don't want to say like, oh, I'm dark now. Cause I'm actually, you know, I'm more weathered.
I see. Sure. Yes. You know?
So, you know, take that for what you will, you know. But yeah, I think, you know, when you're young, you know, you're definitely more emotional but you're also more bright-eyed and you can do anything, you know. And as you get older, yeah, I think I've become a little darker, you know. You know, unfortunately, but I think that's just, you know, how things go, you know.
I agree. Well, I think it's obligatory that I step back for a second and touch back on the atmosphere of emo, because we talked about the future and kind of where we see things headed, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts a little bit more on emo as it is now, because yeah. I think it's fair to say we both went through that era, so it was very authentic to us.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to know, you know, it can be nostalgic, it can be cringe, sometimes I do feel like it really is just capitulating to the nostalgia of millennials. And I don't feel like I'm living in the moment sometimes, you know, when I'm trying to go to a festival or something like that. And it's hard to recapture that feeling. But I guess I say that to say this, could you just speak more to your thoughts on the emo revival? You know, as a whole,
it's all nostalgia. It's nostalgia. Yeah. And music is all nostalgia. Movies are all nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
The culture has stopped.
Mm-hmm.
The culture has stopped. I don't know what's going on. We all just wish for a past time. There's like a whole 80s nostalgia, which I recently did a song with this guy, Dream Kid, this mm-hmm. artist, Dream Kid, who's awesome. And we just did a song together because, again, that's totally an era where all my favorite stuff fit in, you know, that kind of 80s new wave kind of stuff. But everything is nostalgia. You know, I feel like culture has stopped. I don't know. I don't feel like there's anything new. Maybe it's always been that way. You know, maybe it's always been, you know, rock and roll was just stealing from the blues and, you know, it's just, they called it something new and, you know, I don't know. A lot of hip hop's just, I don't know. I think everything's still kind of trap. You know, it's still trap music. I don't really see, everything's nostalgia in my opinion. Where do I see it going? I think it, again, this goes back to my point of it's all cyclical. It's like the seasons, like summer, you know, fall, winter, and then spring comes around and, you know, and that kind of leads me to think of it all as nostalgia. We're just constantly in a circle of nostalgia. Emo yeah. will die. It'll become very cringe soon, I think. And, you know, they're already doing their, you know, third When We Were Young. And, you know, it's selling out and that's great. But eventually it's going to become cringe. That's what happens. You know, everything does that, you know.
Everyone becomes cringe. Everything becomes cringe. Everything. I agree.
And then it comes
you.
Back.
I agree.
And then it comes back around, you know. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yes.
80s hair metal you know, and then you get, you know, then you get, you know, not that some of those bands, some of those legacy bands still do well and stuff, but it's like, you know, eventually you can't stay on the top forever and you can't be the dominant culture and the counterculture at the same time. You know, things, it's just how things go, you know? So I think it will die just as every other style dies and something replaces it. And then it gets resurrected. You know, I see a lot of people loving, you know, nu metal once again. Yes. You know, that might, will probably, you know, be hot. I think that'll kind of be in, with that kind of post-punk thing. I think post-punk will be up there. I think there's like a whole post-punk goth, you know, new wave shoegaze kind of thing. In my opinion, but there might be both of those, new metal and stuff like that. You know, who knows? But I think, you know, I guess my point again is just, you know, nothing can stay popular for, you know, a super long time. Also, in the music industry, I was always told, you know, things happened in 10-year cycles.
Mm.
I don't think that's the case anymore. I think culture moves too fast now. We're moving way too fast. We are saturated by TikTok videos and everything else that we've become so ADD because of it. So I think we're in 3-4 year cycles. You know, things just move so fast that, you know, trends get played out real quick. You know, something popular gets played out real quick, and then, you know, people want the next. You know, you release an album and a kid goes, "This is awesome. I just listened to it. When's the next thing?" It's like, no one has, you know, you don't have time. You have to constant, you know, people need constant stuff. That's why I think the single games is a good idea, because, and that's what we've kind of been doing with Social Orders, you know, single a month, you know, and we're keeping, you know, people kind of on board. And then we've packaged it all together in like an EP or something, you know, and I think that's a good way of keeping people, you know, invested. You know, rather than, I don't think that the days of releasing an album every 2-3 years, I mean, you know, you gotta pump them out, I think, you know, to keep people interested, because we're so saturated. So
I totally agree. And I think you've raised some really profound points and answered actually a lot of questions that I've had, you know, from an outsider perspective, and you've given me the insider perspective. So that brings us to our final point, our final question. You know, looking forward, what are your aspirations for the future, just both in music and personally?
Well, I try to write what I know. So, you know, I try to write what I know. And I think, you know, anytime I'm listening to somebody, I always, or I'm in the studio with someone or something like that, I try to think, do I believe what you're saying? And that's kind of always where, you know, that's always what I want to show in my music is, you know, if not the story is 100% true, you know, it's gotta be true though. You know, you have to put your, you know, I have to actually live it or have lived it, you know. What do I see as the future? Well, Social Order has a bunch of shows coming up in January, February, which will be great. And, you know, we're definitely going to be putting out a bunch of music. And hopefully doing a tour with, you know, some of the bands, you know, we've been kind of, we've become friends with in this kind of like dark wave scene. Some of them, there's like, this band Corinne, who I really like, who hopefully we'll play some shows with. Their their keyboardist Trey, he produced mixed a lot of the Social Order stuff. There's an artist, Johnny Dynamite, we just did a single with. We'll probably play a couple shows with them next year. And, you know, again, kind of seeing I think it'll be a very interesting, hectic year, obviously with an election and stuff like that here in the United States. Things become all chaotic, which is great for art. So we'll see.
Well, it sounds fantastic. Well, Mason, thank you so much for taking the time and for your insight. And of course, it goes without saying, I'm looking forward to everything you're doing with Social Order.
Thank you.
So thank you so much.
Thank you, Akiva. Thank you for having me.
Of course.